We're holding on pay chess on the bays, 12 lines from the bottom line against Shemin. Right here. Hold the flip, yeah.
Okay. Let's go.
Okay. Okay. We discussed yesterday the question of just put it between the pages, isn't it, or something. Okay, we were talking yesterday about the end of our Mishnah had mentioned that they need 3.5 loggers of oil every day for the menorah, a half a log per lamp, and that got us into a discussion about how they went about doing the Hatava and the Havlaka, and which we're going to talk about more today also, and also the question of how they were able to clean out the lamps every day. We have two opinions. One is that the lamps were removable, so therefore very simple. They could take them off the top of the menorah and clean them. The other opinion was specifically Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Sadik, who said that there, and we said, and also Rabbi Huna Bered Rabbi Yehuda, the Amora, follows that opinion, that they were attached to the ends of the branches of the menorah. Therefore, the only way you would be able to clean them out would be to bend them downward to be able to reach them.
Some were removable, and some.
But not some. There's two different opinions. Two different opinions about
right.
Seven lamps of the menorah.
Right.
One, some Tanoim say that they were removable, and some Tanoim say that they were fixed in place.
But I thought the menorah was one block of gold.
Yeah, that's what we're going to discuss now. Wait. Okay. Well, we're close to Dahani Tanoim. So now this machloikus that we just mentioned is also a machloikus between the following Tanoim. Tanya, as we learn in a braisa, as follows. Menorah v'neiris seha, bois min hakikar, the menorah and its lamps were all made from the kicker of gold, which implies that the lamps were a fixed part of the menorah, and therefore they were all made out of the same kicker-sized block of gold. A kicker is a weight, right? But the point is that you have the Pasuk mentioned that the menorah has to be mikra, and it says that they were kicker zohar tor yasa oisa, eskol akela ma'ela. So the question basically comes down to, as we're going to see in the Gemara, in a few lines, what does eskol akela ma'ela mean? Does it mean also the lamps for the menorah or not? So we're saying that the menorah and its lamps all came from the kicker. Therefore, that would mean they all came from the same block. The ein makacher or machaser min hakicker. However, this first Tana, the Braisa says that the melkachayim, which are little Rashi on the Pasuk explains, they're little tweezers that they would use to pull out the wicks, which are dressed them in place or whatever, and machaser are little pans to be able to scoop out the burnt ashes and oil and whatever. So those things are not min hakicker. Those don't come from the kicker. Those are separate. They're not part of the menorah either, exactly. And therefore, they're made. The point is that you would think they had to be made. You think at least you start from with the kicker of gold, and then fine, you break off a couple of pieces and use them to make the malchayim and masses, and use the rest of it for the menorah. No, you have one kicker for the menorah together with its lamps, and then a separate, and then outside of that kicker, you have the other one. Fine. Rav Nechemya. Wait. We're going to see soon. Okay. Rav Nechemya, menorah hoisa ba min hakicker. Rav Nechemya says no, only the menorah itself came from the kicker of gold, and therefore was hammered out of one block. V'loy neiriseh u'matochel u'matriseh bois min hakicker. Its lamps and the tweezers and the shovels, or scoops, whatever, did not come from the kicker. So therefore, so we see, we have machlokes tanoim, whether the lamps for the menorah
are in gold.
The lamps were gold, definitely, and we're going to discuss that soon, but they have a machloikas, whether they came from the same block of gold and therefore were hammered in one piece with the menorah or not. So there you go. So we have a machloikas on it. Incidentally,
the Torah says nailis, right?
Torah says nailis. The Torah says in those tukim, it mentions a machlokel machlokel zahav tar. It says you have the tweezers and you have the scoops that are made of zahav tar. But then it says kikar zahav tar yasa oisa eskalakela ma'ela. So we have to figure out what does eskalakela ma'ela comes. What does it include and what doesn't it include? That's what we have to figure out. Wait, hold on. That's what we're gonna discuss. Mind you have a different explanation. I think that Amban gives a different explanation that the Makoseah and Makoseah are things that actually are attached to the menorah, but still, according to Artana, they're made as separate pieces and then attached to it. He learns that the Makochayim are something like what we discussed yesterday, that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi said that each lamp has cover that could be moved aside to clean it and then moved back in place to cover it. So he learns that's what the Makochayim are.
Covers.
covers. I guess I haven't looked inside in the Ramban to see exactly how he gets that from the word melchayim, but maybe because it holds the rip in place, so therefore it's similar in that sense. No, so in that case, well, we said they were removable, so therefore they're obviously not hammered out of the same block of the menorah. Yeah. And then the maaseh, according to him, would be little shelf-like things sticking out underneath each candle so that if oil overflows or whatever, it'll land on those rather than landing on the floor. So again, the idea is that those also would have been, according to the Tanakhama over here, would have been made separately and attached to the menorah. Okay. And then Rav Nechemya says that also the lamp. Okay. The my community, so what are they arguing about? The high cross. So they're arguing about how to learn the pasuk, the Tanakh. So we have a braisa, another braisa that explains how we're learning it from the pasuk. The pasuk says like, so the whole pasuk goes like, kikar zahav tara yasa oisa, you should make it out of a kikar of pure gold, es kola kela ma'ela, all of these kalim. So what does that mean? So let's start with kikar zahav tara yasa oisa, make it out of a kikar of pure gold. That means lamanu menorah shabam and a kikar. Okay, so that teaches us the menorah itself has to be made from a kikar. The seven branches and the flowers and then all the decorations, flowers and knobs, everything underneath, right, everything up to the lamp, right. By the way, we learned earlier in the Masech there that only if the menorah is made out of gold does it have that rule that it has to be made out of a kikar. If, for example, we learned that there were times in Jewish history when they couldn't afford it and they had to make menorahs out of lesser materials, then it doesn't have to adapt to be from a kikar. Anyway, okay. Of course, as long as it has seven lamps. The basic thing is that that's seven lamps, which is why you have, by the way, the halacha is you can't make any seven-branched lamp because that would be like duplicating the one in the Beis Mikdash.
Even out of wood.
Well, you have a machloekus in the Gemara over there whether you can make it out of wood because clay shards can't be made out of wood. The halacha is they can't, so I guess in that sense you probably could make seven-branched menorah out of wood. The Hashmonaim, we said over there, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, argued they made it out of wood, but Chacham told them, no, they made it out of iron plated with tin. Okay. Anyway, getting back to our Gemara. Okay. So, fine. So the menorah has to be made out of a kikar. Yinayin l'rabis neiris seha, continues the braisa. How do we know that this kikar also includes the lamp? Talmud lema, es kol ha-kelem ha-ele. Therefore it says, and all these kelem. The lamps are the kelem of the menorah. Yochel shani marba ach machachel machachel. Then in that case, you would think that the tweezers and the scoops should also be included. No, talmud lema oisa. So you have also, in the pasuk, you have the word oisa, kikar zohav tariyasa oisa, which is a meal. Something is excluded. Therefore, the something that's excluded is the melchachayim and the matzah. Divrei Rav Nechemya. So that's what Rav Nechemya said. And before we continue this, right, so the Gemara interjects, Kasha the Rav Nechemya, the Rav Nechemya. It comes out then that we have a contradiction of what Rav Nechemya is saying. The previous braisa that we said, Rav Nechemya was the one who said that the neiris were not from the kikar, meaning they weren't attached to the menorah, and our braisa says they do come from the kikar. So which is it? The answer is, okay, straight tanoim, I'll live in Rav Nechemya. Okay, you have two tanoim disagreeing what Rav Nechemya said. Did he say that the neiris are part of the kikar or not? Fine. Then we have another opinion, Rav Yeshua ben Karfeimer. Menorah bomb in a kikar, only the body of the menorah itself was made from the kikar. The ein machacher or machacher vin neireseah bomb in a kikar. Neither the tweezers nor the scoops nor the actual lamps themselves that held the oil and the wick come from the kikar. So none of that. The elamani mekayim es kol hakelim ha'ela. So what is Rabbi Shrubin Kofa says? So what do I do with the pasuk es kol hakelim ha'ela? He says that's not referring to coming from the kikar. That means.
What should he say with it?
It says in the pasuk. It says Eskalakelam Eila. So Rav Nechemya in the Braisa over here is saying that to include something. You have to include something. What does Eskalakelam Eila mean? It means it's not teaching that they come from the kikar. It just means Chiyuk Shahoyu Kalim Shazav. It just teaches us that those three things, the lamps and the lamps and the Melchachayim and the Masses, have to be made out of gold.
One second, I hear you, but
not from the kikar.
So the Torah would say, the Torah says, Kikar Zahag Tahar Yasa Oisa Eskalakelam Eila. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha learns that those are two different things. Kikar zahav tar yasa oisa, the menorah itself has to be made out of a kikar of gold. However, es kola kelim ha'ela, however, all of these kelim, because you have the word oisa, which excludes, then it excludes all of those kelim, they are made out of gold, but they're not made out of the kikar.
So my question is, why would the Torah be so convoluted to allow us to make a confusion?
Well,
I think it involves both things. Not only one.
That, because that's how the Torah is. The Torah writes things, and the Chachamim are expected to darshan the Pesukim and understand what it means. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha understands the Pesuk this way. Otherwise, if it wanted to say that everything comes from the kikar, it would have said kikar zahav tahor yasa oisa ve'es kolkei leha, or yasa oisa ve'es kolkei leha mina kikar, or something to that effect. Since it doesn't say like that.
You could say
He doesn't know that there's a Hekesh in the Pasuk over there. He learns that a Hekesh is something that you have to have the Kabbalah. We learned that before. You don't make a Hekesh on your own. So therefore, he says, no, there's no Hekesh over here. Okay. So what it means is that they have to be of gold. What do you mean? You don't need a Pasuk for that. You have it earlier. It says, Zahav the Hedek Sivar. It says earlier that they have to be made out of gold. But he says, Nerefer Shiva. You make seven lamps. The Hela is Nerefer. And he should light the lamps. The Heir al Evaponer. They should shine towards the face of the menorah. We're discussing next parak what direction they face. Actually, wait. Umachachel machisel zahav tar. And then the next part continues. The tweezers and the tweezers and the pans are made out of zahav tar. So it's very clear that they're made out of zahav. You don't need the pasuk tikar zahav tar yasa oisas kalakelam eila to tell us that the kelim are made out of gold. Fine.
Is it mentioned twice?
No.
Why is not?
Well, no, that's the thing. So we're saying, no. So when we say, because you said, Kiko Zav Tariyasa Osa Eskala Kalam Eila, that's the thing. We're not, on the face of it, we're not saying that the Melchachayim and Maxis we're repeating again, because we already know it from the previous process. And also, it's not Ma'akir, as we said before, that the menorah and all clay shirts can be made out of any metal. It's not Ma'akir
so,
to be made out of.
Yeah,
no, but that's the thing. The answer is that Lo Nitzracha El Lepine. The answer is that the second thing, the part that we were saying before, Eskala Kela Ma'ela, you're right, it's not including the Melchachayim and Masters, because though it does say about the Zohar Torah, it doesn't need to repeat it, and it's Taka not Ma'akir if you didn't have gold and you made it out of something else. Lo Nitzracha El Lepine. The word Eskala Kela Ma'ela, which again, let's remember, the Nehemiah is learning from Eskola Kelim Ela that the lamps are made out of the same kicker, out of the same block of gold. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is arguing with that, because he says the lamps are removable and they're not part of their kicker. So he says the point of the words, Eskola Kelim Ela, is to teach us also the edge of each lamp, the place where you actually have the wick. Remember from the pictures I was showing you yesterday, you have the area where the wick is and you have the rest of the lamp. That part also has to be made out of pure gold. Now, why? Why would you have to be told that? Because otherwise, you would think to say like this. Since, after all, the place, the end over there, where the wick burns, gets very blackened from all the soot and whatever, and all the carbon from the burning wick, you would think, we have a rule, we have a common rule, that the Torah has, which we've had a couple of times already in our Masechta, the Torah has Rachmanus on Jewish money, and therefore, Halev and Zav called the rule, therefore, maybe we shouldn't have to make that part of the Neiris out of pure gold. Maybe we should be able to make it out of a lesser grade of gold, like alloyed gold or whatever. But that way, Kamash Malon, that is the Chiddush that, no, that part also has to be Zahav Tar.
Why would you think that it could be made out of a lesser?
Because we just said, because you would take a Torah, a Chol, Salmon, and a Torah.
They went out of Mitzvah, they got plenty of gold.
That's fine.
So the money we want, the money
okay, hold on. Okay, the answer is, even in that case, we still often say, I've heard a Chol, Salmon, and a Torah. And second of all, after all, one of the psukim we learned it from was the Ishkita at the Eid of Esbira, which would give the people and their animals to drink. But which plays in the middle. But besides that also, it's not just that it wasn't a one-time thing in history that made the menorah. They had to make menorahs other times also. Anytime, we said before, anytime the menorah broke, they'd have to make it again.
So, one second, we have a cloud, the Machmashirs.
So we're going to talk later about Inan Yerus Machmashirs. Okay, fine. And I've mentioned before, the Noda Yehuda has a tshuva. Okay, so the Noda Yehuda has a tshuva about that, where one thing he points out is that we don't say Inan Yerus Machmashirs does not apply to using a lesser kind of metal. For example, using silver instead of gold would not be an example of Einanius for Makom Hashiros. Einanius for Makom Hashiros would mean, for example, we're going to use less of something because we can't, like we had, for example, we talked about the other day, let's say using the same measuring cup for different things, because like as if we can't afford other ones or different things like that, doing things not in a historical sticker way. But to make something out of one metal versus another, he learned, is not Einanius for Makom Hashiros. There we would
have... degrading the menorah to have it in silver whenever it's...
No, hold on. You actually have two possibilities that Tosfos just mentions over here, because you have two different gear stories over here. Is it that the Hava Amina was that if it weren't for the pasuk, the lamps and their edges, of course, have to be made out of gold, just we would say maybe the edge over there has to be made out of a lesser, can be made out of a lesser kind of gold, and the rest of it out of pure gold, or is it that the Gemara is saying that maybe if it weren't for the pasuk, we could have said that, yes, maybe the edges over there where the wick goes could be made out of silver or some lesser material, and the rest of it would be an edit gold. Two different gears colors. But whatever, according to the gears that Rashi Kaviyad uses over here, which is what we also have in the Gemara in front of us, 11 Zahav Kolderu, would mean it would still be made out of gold. Just the rest of it would be made out of 24 karat gold. And this part where the width goes would be made, let's say, out of 18 karat gold. It would still look, it would be almost as good. So, but therefore, the Chiddush, therefore, the Pasuk tells us, Es Kala Kalim Ela, note, all of the Kalim, including the edge of, including the end of the, of the, of each of the Neiras, has to be made out of Zahav Tar. And if that means that Zahav Tar means pure gold, 24 karat gold, yeah. So therefore, and we're not worried about a Tarah Fos Amamon and Tarah Yisrael in that case. Which, by the way, because that's what the Pasuk is telling us not to worry about it in that case. Which, by the way, this is what I mentioned yesterday. This Fasemis learns over here. He says that apparently the ideal would be tackle what would happen when it would become so blackened that it would look unattractive. Then, then they would have to remelt them down and remake them. If we say, like with Nehemia in our last Braita, if we say, like with Yeshua ben Korcha, rather, in our last Braita, that the natives were removable, good, all you have to do is melt those down and remake them. If you say, like with Nehemia, and like the other Tanoim that we mentioned yesterday, that the whole thing, including the Neiris, was made out of one block, then it would mean they'd have to melt down the whole thing and remake it. That would be the total, you would think, a total chot on the morning of Yisrael, a shud that you should have to keep on every so often remelting it and remaking it, which would be a bother. No, nevertheless, the Torah is telling us the you don't cut corners in that case. You go ahead and make the whole thing out of pure gold.
We hold the principle, and it is the Machlokes.
But again, it's not specifically because Ein Aniyas Mokem Ashiris, because again, like the Noda Behodes, here the Torah is specifically saying, in this one case, because the Torah Yasa says,
By the way, gold doesn't become black when it comes in burning on it.
Anything becomes gold, maybe less than other metals, fine, because less reactive, but still, it'll still get black, it'll still get a surface blackening, and eventually, I guess, it can penetrate. I don't know. I guess the Fasemis would say, if you're able to wash it off and remove it, then good, but obviously, if you could, then fine. But if not, then okay. Fine. Let me set him in the Mishnah. Chatzilub Shemen
Mekoyim.
But that's the, no, so we're, so there's no, 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 so, no, we're left with two opinions. Were the Neiris and the Menorah removable or not? If they were removable, then good. They would remove them every day and clean them out and then put them back. If they weren't removable, then they would have to bend down the branches in order to clean them. Okay. Next thing we said in the Mishnah was Chatzilub Shemen Mekoyim. We said that another purpose they used, the half log measure in the Beit Hamikdash, was for measuring out the oil for the Torah. So now we have to figure out how we know indeed that there's a half a log of oil for the bread with the Torah. Again, let's recap. We said before, although we're actually going to discuss that now again in the Gemara, that you have four types of loaves of bread that come with the Torah. One of them is 10 loaves of chametz. Those don't have any oil in them at all, so they're out of the picture. You have three types of matzah, chalas, rechikin, and revucha, and you have the way it is according to Rabbi Akiva, which ends up being, we're going to discuss over here, that's in our Gemara over here, that you have out of that, half of that oil goes to the revucha, so a quarter of a lug, a revius goes into the revucha, and the other quarter gets divided, and an eighth of it goes to the chalos, and an eighth of it goes to the rechikin. So now we're going
to
discuss that.
A quarter to the revucha.
An eighth to the chalice, an eighth to the rikikin, and that's the total of the half. The rikikin are either, we said before, either it means they're thin wafers, like crackers, right? Or it means they're the same thickness as the chalice, but the difference is the chalice are blended with oil, and the rikikin are just smeared. Revucha is where they scalded the flour in boiling hot water, and they fried it, baked it, went through a number of processes.
It's 10 chalice.
10 chalice of each kind. 10 of each kind. So 40 altogether. Okay. So we said, okay, so Chatzilug Shem in the Torah, Kanye, so we learn in Braitha, Rabbi Akiva Omer.
Those are the two Chatzilugim, by the way.
The Menorah and, right, the Menorah and the Torah. No, we said there was a third one as well. We said also for the Soita.
Yeah,
we said also for the Soita, right.
Right.
Okay. No, in our Mishnah, we had mentioned. In our Mishnah, actually, we'd only mentioned the Torah and the Soita. The Mishnah had not explicitly mentioned that they used the half a log for the Menorah, but we explained in the Gemara that was actually the reason why they had to be made into a clean shardis, is because they had to measure out for it for the Menorah.
Okay.
Mind you, actually, Tosfos actually brings up an interesting question. The Menorah itself is a clean shardis. Why would you need to put the oil in another clean shardis before you bring it in to fill up the lamp for the Menorah? Tosfos just leaves
the
Menorah. You could just bring it in a simple case. The Tosfos just leaves the question unresolved, and Achronim talk about a few different possibilities. Maybe, in fact, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, look, Tosfos themselves talk about before the idea that you can't bring cholin into the Azara. For sure, you have to put it in a free shortage, just so it says that it doesn't remain cholin until, yeah, so it has to listen to the group. Yeah. But you have other ideas as well. Another one of the Mephoshim, I think, the Karen Ora, says that maybe Taka, you're not only that, to bring something into the Heichel, so that's Kedusha Segufu. You're not going to have that. It's only going to get Kedusha Segufu when you put it into the Menorah. Okay, anyway. Fine. So Tanya, Rabbi Akiva. But now let's talk about the Torah. Tanya, Rabbi Akiva. That's Tosfos. Well, Tosfos just asked the question. You have Achronim that argue about the pros and cons of it. So Tanya, we learn in a Brai, so Rabbi Akiva, Ma Tamad Loima Bashemen Shnei Pomim. Now, when it comes to the Korban Torah, there's three times in that pasuk where it says Bashemen, but right now we're just going to focus on the first two. The pasuk says like this, Imal Torah Yachruvenu, a person is doing a Korban Torah, the Hikra of Al-Zevah HaTorah, Chalos Matis Blos Bashemen, or a Kike Matis Meshuchem Bashomen. Bashomen, Bashemen is the same thing. Because it's down in Asnafta, so there's an Korban changes. And then it continues later with the Mubechas, but that we'll deal with later. So why does it mention by the chalas and the rikikin individually by each one bashemen? Like this, ilu l'nema ela bashemen echad. So Rabbi Akiva says like this: if it only said one time bashemen, then we would say, okay, what does it mean that it needs shemen? It means like other menachos, it needs a lug of oil. Every mincha we said in our mishnah needs a lug of oil. So therefore, it would be the same thing over here. No, if it just said bashemen, we would say it means it needs the same amount, not really a hekesh, but we'd just say it's like any other mincha. It would be like a binyan av, basically. So any other mincha needs the lug. So therefore, here also it needs the lug. Bashemen. But now, when it says an extra time bashemen, have a ribuy acha ribuy, then you have a ribuy following another ribuy. The end ribuy acha ribuy elolamai. So therefore, it comes to make it less. So therefore, the pasuk is reducing it down from a whole log to a half a log.
You know, it's half and not a third, or
because once you're reducing it from a whole, the pasuk, you're reducing it to the next simple fraction. If it was going to be any other fraction other than that, the Torah would have had to say. Okay. The question is, what do you mean? Ribu yachar ribu chad ribu. What do you mean? There's only one ribu because you only have one extra bashemen. You only have one extra bashemen. Actually, Tosfos brings up the point that you have other Gemaras, for example, earlier in Ar Masechta and the Sugya about Mezuzah, where the Gemara actually calls it a ribui acha ribui, even when the question is like this. When we say chad ribui hu, the question is because on the face of it, we need one bashemen just to tell us the chlal that needs oil, otherwise you would think it doesn't need oil at all. So therefore, the Gemara is asking you only have one ribui. Tosfos says, l'chora by Mezuzah. We had, for example, we used the word Mezuzah twice. We said it's a ribu yachagru, and therefore it's mamayat, that you only need a mezuzah on one side of the door and not on both. So that's the thing. Our Gemara seems to be implying that you would need two repeats for it to be a ribu yachagru. Whereas by mezuzah, we only need one repeat. So again, Tosfos asks the question and leaves it unresolved. It is unresolved. You have a number of Rishonim and Achronim talk about various answers there. Among them are, because over here, the word bashemen, the Chedushim HaMichos HaMarashba says, the word bashemen itself doesn't tell us how much oil. We're logically figuring, okay, if it says bashemen, it means a log of oil like the other menachos. But it doesn't actually say an amount. Therefore, we can say that one bashemen, therefore the Gemara can be arguing one bashemen is just needed to tell us the chlal that it needs oil, and the other one is available only, and the other one, therefore, is available only for a ribu. But I have other answers as well, including that by mezuzah, it's spelled differently in the two parashiyos. One is spelled with an extra vav, one without. So therefore, we can say that each one is sort of extra. Also, the fact that it could have said mezuzah or mezuzah or whatever. Unless this says mezuzah, whereas here we don't have that. Okay. Anyway, so the question is, what does Rabbi Akiva mean if there's a ribu yachar ribu? On the face of it, there's only one. No. Ella, ilu lo nemem b'shemen toli. So no, rather, we have to learn it like this. If it didn't say bashemen at all, we reject that explanation so far that it's because if it said only one bashemen, we would say it needs a look. But let's try it again. Ilu lo nema bashemen kol iker. So yeah, if it didn't say bashemen at all, still, we'll start again. So before we were saying that if it said one bashemen, we would say that means a look. Now we're going to say even if it didn't say bashemen at all, we would say why should the last metoda be any different than any other mincha? Now, it's true, technically, the Lachmei Torah are not, strictly speaking, a regular mincha. However, they do include chalos and the chicken, similar to other menachos, and therefore, even without the word bashemen, we would assume that they're made with oil. Achshav shenema bashemen, but now it turns out that both bashemens are extra. Because we already know it has shemen just for the fact that it's like any other chalos and your chicken. therefore have a ribuy acha ribuy. So now, says Rabbi Akiva, you have a ribuy acha ribuy, then ribuy acha ribuy al lamayit, and now we can say that one ribuy after another comes to lamayit, therefore miyacha yachas l'chatzi lug. Therefore now we have the pasuk has reduced it down to a half a lug.
So,
because before we had the problem that if we said that you still needed one bashemen to, that you still needed one bashemen to tell us that needs a lug. So then the question is, well, in that case, we need that one bashemen to tell us to tell us that it needs oil, and then we only have one more, and you don't have a ribuy acha ribuy. Now we're saying, even without any bashemens at all, we would know it has shemen. And that bashemen would be a lug, just like any other mincha. Therefore, now that we have two bashemens, then we have a ribuy acha ribuy. Okay. Then continues Rav Akiva. Okay, but that's how it is with things that we doubt in. Yeah, but that's what Rav Akiva considers, that we have a remez in the pasuk for it. We can doubt in the pasuk for it. Fine.
So you just need a remez, ribuy acha
ribuy? Yeah, that's yeah. Yochol yehechasi lug zem mischalik l'shloishes minin l'chalos l'kikon l'ulavicha. So now, continues Rav Akiva, you would think what you do is you take that half a lug and split it evenly among the chalos, the kikon, and the ravucha. But no. True oimah, bashemen, beravucha. But now you have, in that pasuk, it says a third time bashemen as far as the soilus murbecha, as far as the ravucha, the one where it's put in boiling hot water for. Now again, it didn't have to say the word bashemen over there, because the definition of revucha involves oil as well. Every other time when the Torah talks about a mincha that's made mubeches, then it means that it has oil. So what's the extra word bashemen over here? Any mincha revucha, for example, the mincha chavitin, the Torah already says there that it has oil. But now, if we're saying that you need soilus mubeches, then it doesn't have to say that it has bashem. So what is the bashem? No, so therefore, it teaches us something extra about the revucha. Okay, so how riba shemen the revicha? Yeah, it means that we're adding extra oil into the revicha. Okay, sad. So what does this mean altogether? Maybe chatzi log shemen. So it means you start out with a half a log of oil, and you divide it in half into two revias. Chetzi lechalos for the kitchen. One revias goes into the chalos and the kitchen. 1/8 of a log for each one. The chetzi the revicha, and the other half a revias goes towards the revicha. So the revicha ends up with twice as much oil per chala as the chalos in the kitchen.
The
Ravucha has one quarter of a lug, so let's say in modern terms, or according to Rav Chaim, the Ravias is 3 ounces, so it has 3 ounces of oil between the 10 lobes. The 10 lobes themselves, you say. One quarter of a lug divided up among 10 lobes. So you have, so what are you talking about? So you'd have, three-tenths of an ounce, let's say, of oil per challah. Whereas in the chalos and the rishikin, you would have half of that. You'd have 1.5 tenths, so 3/20ths of an ounce. To put it in metric terms, if it'll make it easier, then fine. You know, you have about a gram and a half of oil in each of the chalos for a gram and a half. You know, whatever. You're from France and you don't know what a gram. We're talking about a revius. So we're talking about then we're dividing up the revius among 10 chalas. So we're dividing up among 20 chalas, as the case may be. So it's 1/10 or 1/20 of a revius. Mm-hmm. So let's say a gram and a half for each of the chalas in the chicken, and 3 grams each of oil for the revius. Okay. Fine. So that's how Rabbi Akiva lives. All the Lord of Elazar ben Azariah, however, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said to him, Akiva, Im atamarba kolayon kule bashemen bashemen. Even if you sit there all day finding ribuyim from the word bashemen, eini shemei alach. I'm not going to listen to you because I don't hold that's where we learn it from. Partly it could be because of the question before that we said that on the face of it we need one of them. He's a chaver of Rabbi Akiva. He's entitled to talk to him that way. Ella, no. Rather, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it's not. We're not learning it from the psukim like you say. Ella, no, rather, he's going to mention a number of things which you, Rabbi Akiva, hold. I'll learn from Sukkim, and each of them I hold is halacha l'moshe mitzinai, as he's going to say at the end. So he's going to list three dinim, which actually all of them, Rabbi Akiva holds are not halacha l'moshe mitzinai in the sense that we have droshes from Sukkim for them. The definition of a true halacha l'moshe mitzinai is something where there's no remez in the Torah at all for it.
Here we do.
And he will coincide, okay, we do. So, but Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is disagreeing and saying, I'm not learning it from the Ribu. Now, No, he holds that Remez doesn't go for it because you can't say it's a Ribu Yachar Ribu. Yeah, he holds that you're not learning this concept from there. So now, does that mean that he actually argues the halacha with Rabbi Akiva? So it depends. But so So actually, according to Miyuchas Rashi, he's not necessarily arguing with Rabbi Akiva. He agrees on the basic concept. He may even agree with Rabbi Akiva. He may even agree with Rabbi Akiva about the fact that we're learning from the pasuk that you have a half a log total, that you do use the ribu yachal ribu for that. However, he disagrees and says when it comes to this that you're saying that you have extra in the ruvucha and less in the chalos in the kikin, that I disagree. You're learning from the pasukim. That I say you learn halachah l'mishum tzitzis. That's how Miyuchas Rashi learns it. Rashi Ksaviyat says that no, actually what it would mean is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would actually disagree on the halacha with Rabbi Akiva. He would say a half a log, fine, but that's halacha l'mishum tzitzis. But halacha l'mishum tzitzis does not say, as you, Rabbi Akiva, are saying, divide it, give extra to the ruvucha and less to the chalos and the rikikin. No, it will be divided equally among the three of them, a third of a half a log, so a sixth of a log for each set of chalos. But not like Rabbi Akiva says a quarter here, an eighth here, and an eighth here, but rather a sixth here, a sixth here, a sixth here.
And that's based on?
Based on, that's because if we're learning it, halacha l'mishum tzitzis. Halacha l'mishum tzitzis is not saying how much you're putting in the ruvucha and how much you're putting in the chalos and how much you're putting in the rikikin. So therefore, we should assume that they're equal. That's how Rashi Ksaviyah, which is the actual Rashi, learns.
And Rabbi Akiva would say?
Rabbi Akiva would say, as we said, no, because we're learning it from the psukim. He has his psukim, he has his various bashemin. So he's saying, no, a quarter for one, an eighth for one, an eighth for one.
Okay. And the eighth, when the eighth is...
He learns that from the extra Hashem, that says by the Revolver. Okay. Ella, so, says Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, no, chatzi log shemen l'toida, this that you need a half a log for the lachmei toida, or revi'at shemen l'nozer, and this that also we learned earlier in the Masechta, that when it comes to the bread that a nozer brings with his korbanos, where there you have to have a revi'at of oil mixed, put in there, into the chalos of the kitchen, the achad also yem shemen nidol l'mida, and another din about that you have an 11-day period between one period of nida and the next. So this isn't the place to go into it at length. We'll talk about it in the Sechta Erechin and in the Sechta Nida, says the Shem, in due time. But briefly, what it is Minat Torah. Now, nowadays, we keep it completely differently. But Minat Torah, there's a 7-day, during every cycle of a woman's life, there's a 7-day period during which any bleeding is considered Dam Nida. And technically, you have actually an achlokas between the Rambam and all the other Rishonim how to calculate it exactly. But let's talk, for example, according to the Rambam. Okay, so you know what? Here, so let's say like this, for example, the first time a woman has a period, then that begins her 7 days of nida. Doesn't matter whether the bleeding was a momentary thing, 1 day, 2 day, whatever, 3 days, whatever. At the end, she has to wait until the end of the 7 day, until the end of the 7th day from the beginning of it, and then she can toivel and she's tovel again. So let's say, for example, it happened. It started, let's say it started on Sunday, Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Let's say. So then it would mean that on Shabbos, Zion Kislev, she's able to go to the mikveh as long as the bleeding stops sometime before that. After that, you have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying the next point is halacha l'mishum tzitzis. Rabbi Akiva would disagree and say that you learn it from Sukkim. The next 11 days after that are considered Yemei Ziva. Those are, it's not expected that she should be bleeding during that time.
Including,
beginning from the 8th day, so let's say in our case, Cheskislev. No, and continuing for 11 days from there. Sunday of 1 week through Wednesday of next week, let's say. Those are the 11 Yemei Ziva. During those days, if she has bleeding, then you have different dinim depending on whether it was for 1 day, 2 days, or 3 days. If there was 1 or 2 days of bleeding, this is all we're talking about a daraisa level. Nowadays, we do things completely differently. We keep the chumras of Nida and of Zava, plus we have a chumra that's the most Mirah last month. We'll get there in Nida, that's the shame. But anyway.
Talking on a daraisa level,
the first 7 days of Kislev, let's say, are her Yemei Ziva. Right. The next, from the 8th through the 18th of Kislev, let's say, is Yemei Ziva. If she has 1 or 2 days of bleeding during that period, she needs one clean day after that. She's called a Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom. As long as she has one clean day during the... Right. She needs one clean day. She toivels and she's proper. If she has bleeding 3 days consecutively during that period, within that 11 days, then she's a Zavah Gola, then she needs 7 clean days, and then she can go to the Mikveh. According to the Rambam, otherwise she's a Zavah Kana, also known as Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom. Okay. According to the Rambam, once the 11 days are over, the next day after that, in our scenario, Yud Tes Kislev, is the beginning of the Hu Yemei Nida again, whether she actually bleeds on it or not. According to the Rambam, you always have 7, 11, 7, 11. It's divided up that way. According to all the other Rishonim, no. What it would be is if she didn't have, and if after the 11 days are over, so after we come now to Yud-Tes Kislev, the next, beginning on Yud-Tes Kislev, or any day after that, the next time she bleeds, that will be the beginning of her 7 days of Nidah again. So let's say, for example, she has a monthly cycle, as most women do, and let's say, for example, the next time she bleeds, and not so Rosh Chodesh Tevis, let's say, then that would be, according to Rashi and according to everybody else, would be the beginning of her Yemei Nidah again. Whereas according to the Rambam, we would have to be counting 7 days from your test to Chafei Kislev, and then 11 days from Chavos Kislev through Uri Tevis, etc. We'll get there in the Sefer of Nidah, Beis Hashem. We'll talk about it. We'll be talking about it at great length. There's many, many Gemaras that are involved in it. All the Rishonim and Achronim have huge problems with how the Rambam understands it based on the relevant Gemaras over there. We'll get there in due time.
The Rambam says 7-11,
7-11 always. Rashi and everybody else says 7-11, and then however many days it takes until there's another bleeding, which then you have the next.
So for the Rambam, it says she's Nida, then if she becomes Ziva during the Ziva, she sees something?
If she does, not necessarily. The 11 days of Ziva are not necessarily she actually sees something. But if she does, then the dinim of a Zava applies.
Another what?
I know that depending 1 or 2 or 3 days, let us say.
For the Rambam also?
Everybody agrees to that, yes.
Okay,
yes.
And then if...
The difference is, when do you start this next 7 days? Do you start it right after the 11 days, which is how the Rambam says, or do you wait until the next time she actually bleeds after the 11 days, and then that's the start of a new 7-day cycle?
Oh.
Okay, whatever. Again, we'll get to that in more detail in Nidah, that's Hashem, the next year. But now is not the time to talk about how we do it nowadays, because nowadays we don't do anything like what I just described. This was all strictly Midin Torah. So let's not even talk about what we do nowadays, because it will be too confusing. The point is, this that you have, that 11-day period, when a woman can become a Zava, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, is Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim. So therefore, he's arguing with Rabbi Akiva on that. Whereas Rabbi Akiva would say that, as well as the other two things that we mentioned, the half a log for the Torah and the quarter of a log for the Nazir, Rabbi Akiva would say we learn them all from Sukkim, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says they're all halacha l'moshe mitzvah.
He doesn't hold,
but we darshan them from the Sukkim the way that Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Fine. Let's continue. The Mishnah had then said, the next thing is the log. So it's actually interesting. If you say that the only argument between them is that they both agree about how the oil is distributed among the chalas, the only question is, are we learning it from halacha l'moshe mitzrayim or are we learning it from the Sukkim? Then the halacha is actually the Rambam Paskin's life of Elazar ben Azariah that all these things are halacha l'moshe mitzrayim. If you were to say that, like Rashi Ksaviyad, that they're actually arguing how much oil you put in each of the three types of chalas, then no, and that's the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva.
So other than the measurements of how much oil, everything is...
The fact that, yes.
And that is... That's
the Rambam passes all these three things that way. Right? It would mean that if we accept that it's halacha l'moshe mitzrayim, nobody can argue with it, but they can argue whether a particular din is halacha l'moshe mitzrayim or not, or whether we're looking at some circles. Okay. Right. Then we said in the Mishnah, b'lug hayam moedet, we said the lug... Measuring cup.
This machlokes will remain after Mashiach comes?
I don't know. Probably not. I don't know. I guess like any other machlokes, it'll be resolved. I don't know. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Belug Hoyamoded, Kula, we said in the Mishnah that they measured with the lug for all menachas, because every mincha needs a lug of oil, and then we had a machlokes in the Mishnah. If a person brings a larger mincha, a person can bring a mincha, we'll learn later on, up to 60 isarin in one keli. So then we had a machlokes, how many lugim of oil do you put into it? The Tanakhama said you put as many lugim as you have esrenim, so one isarin, one lug, two esrenim, two lugim, etc. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said that you always only put in one lug regardless of the size limit. So let's discuss that. Tanarabonim, we learn a brayta. The Masora Oniksiv. Now you have like this. In Parashas Masora, the Torah describes the korbanos that a rich Masora has to bring when he's finished with his tzaraah. He brings three animals together with Nesachim and together with a log of oil.
That's an Oni.
I didn't say he was an Oni. If he's an Osher, I'm saying. Hold on. I'm giving you some background.
Okay.
If he's an Osher, he has to bring three animals together with Nesachim and together with a log of oil. Where is it? He brings a male sheep for an Ola, a female sheep for Hathas, and a ram, and what is it? I think he brings a I forget. I think it was one sheep for an Ola, another one for an Osham, and a female sheep for a Chasa. I'd have to look that up. I don't remember. But whatever. Anyway. If he's poor, then instead of two of the animals, instead of the animals for an Ola and a Chasa, instead he brings birds. The third one, the Osham, still has to be an animal because there's no such thing as an Osham of a bird.
An
Osham is always an animal. And now, when it comes... Always an animal. Now, when it comes to the Pesukim by the Mesorah Ani, the Pesuk repeats pretty much all the details that it repeats by the Mesorah Osher, even if, with the appropriate changes. So therefore, the Mesorah Ani Ksiv is Soren Bolo Velug. Now, by the Mesorah Ani, you have a Pesuk that says like this, if he's poor, then he brings one sheep for an Osham, and then he brings one Isoren of flour mixed with oil for a Mincha, plus an extra log of oil for the, where they do the sprinkling of it, and then they put it on an ear, thumb, and toe. So, you have in the Pesuk over there, it mentions Isorin, it mentions Bolo, mixed, and then it mentions at the end, the Loig Shomen. Now, the Loig, in context of the Pesuk over there, is talking about the extra separate Loig that he brings. But still, since it's in the Pesuk, together with the Mincha and the mixing, then that teaches us something about the mixing of a Mincha with oil. Limit al Isorin, Shaton, Loig, Dibre Chachamim. Therefore, the Chachamim say, from there we learn that every Isorin of Mincha requires a Loig of oil. So there you go. If it's one Isorin and one Lug, two Esorin, two Lugim, etc. From the fact that it says Isorin Veloig. So therefore it means every Isorin needs a Lug.
That's
the Chacham. Reb Nechemia and Reb Elezer, remember Reb Nechemia and Reb Elezer, or Reb Elezer and Yaakov actually, say, no, Afilo Mincha shol shishim Esorinim en la'el Lugah, even if the Mincha is 60 Esorinim, you only put one Lug of oil, shenem la Mincha veloig shaman, because the end of the three last words of that topic are for Mincha and a Lug of oil. So they're not saying that we learn from Isorin, instead they're learning from the Mincha veloig shaman, that every Mincha has only a Lug of oil.
Otherwise we'll say Lugin.
No, well, in other words, again, they're saying the Loig Shemin over there is a separate Loig that he's bringing in a separate container from which they do the sprinkling and the application to your thumb and toe. Nevertheless, they say, since it mentions it right next to the word Lemincha, then therefore it means we can darshan that every Mincha in general contains one Loig of oil. Exactly. Okay, so the question is, Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yaakov, how Yisorin bowls the Lord my Avulai. Okay, what do they do with the fact that earlier in the Pesuk it mentions the Yisorin that's mixed with oil, which the Chachamim are saying therefore means every Yisorin has to have a Lord? The answer is out. No, the question is, it contradicts each other. The first part of the Pesuk seems to imply that every Yisorin needs one Lord, that's proportional. The second part seems to imply that you only have one Lord, no matter what the size of the Mincha.
Thank you, Yisorin Bolo.
The fact that it says Yisorin bowls the Lord. Those are actually, Volo means mix. And then it says a few words later, Voloi. Yeah. So what are they doing with that? The answer is, Hai Ahu Legufe. They say you need that to teach us the basic fact. Otherwise, you wouldn't know. The Torah has to tell you that if you bring one Isorin of flour as a Minchas Nisachin. No. The point is, they're saying like this. If you didn't have the word Isorin in that process, you wouldn't know that the Mesorah Oni is Bechal bringing any Isorin of flour at all. You would think maybe he doesn't have to. And the Gemara is going to discuss it. The Gemara is going to continue discussing now why you would think that. But one thing you do have to keep in mind is usually an Osham is not usually one of the types of Korbanos that has Nisachim come along with it. Usually it's only the voluntary Korbanos that come with Nisachim as well as the Korbanos Sibur. A Korban Yochid, a Chasa, so an Osham, and a couple of other ones as well, Bchur and Pesach, etc., don't come with Nisachim. So therefore, so the fact that he has to bring an Osham, a Chatas, an Osham, a Korban Pesach, Bechor, Meiser also, I think, don't come with Nisachim.
The only ones that come with Nisachim.
With Nisachim are Shlomim and Ola, Toida. Okay, so the point is that to bring a Minchas Nisachim together with an Osham is itself kind of an unusual thing. So Rabbi Nechemia and Rabbi Eliezer says, and Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov say, well, that's what the Pesuk needs to tell us. The fact that this Oni is still having to bring the Yisorin. What would the Chachamim answer to that? They would say, the Gufei Leisorin. You don't need those words to teach us that the Oni brings an Isorin. Midgali Rachmana Gavim, Mithurah, Osher, Gimel, Kobonis, Gimel, Asronis. Since the Torah has already told us that a rich Mithurah has to bring three animals, and each one of them is accompanied by an Isorin, a flower. And yeah, it is three sheep, actually, because yeah, a sheep is accompanied by one Isorin. Yeah, it is three sheep. It's two males and one female. Anyway, the point is, if the Osher brings three korbanos, and together with them the Torah tells us it brings three Yisraelis, Hacha, the Chad korban, well over here, he's bringing one animal for a korban, obviously, Chad Yisorin, obviously he's bringing one Yisorin of flowers. So the Torah didn't need to tell us the word Yisorin in the process, the Chachamim say, and therefore, if it did, it must be to teach us about other kinds of menachos, that every mincha, that every mincha, you have as many lugim of oil as you have a Yisorinus of flowers.
That's what it
comes to teach us. Okay, the Idach, what would Rabbi Nechemya and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov answer to that? They would say, Itzra. Yeah, but you still need to have it said specifically by the Oni. Talk about it, because otherwise you would think like this. Look, after all, the Torah is having Rachmana from him and allowing him to bring a poor carbon and substituting for two of the animals and their Nesachim to substitute birds for them instead. Aim a lowly boy mincha file. You would think maybe the Torah is also giving him a break that he shouldn't have to bring a mincha at all. Fine, he has to bring one animal for an asham, because there's no such thing as a bird in asham, but at least it should be like every regular asham and not have to have nesachim. Therefore, we need the prophet to tell us specifically that no, he needs an isari. And we need the word isari back, so we need the word otherwise because he would have thought, exactly, that maybe for a poor person he doesn't have to. Maybe only a rich person has to bring an isari with his asham. So therefore, they say, you're back to the word Yisorin is needed lagufa. You need it to teach us that he needs to bring an Yisorin. Therefore, you don't have it available for any drushes about the Yisorin being mixed with an equal, the Chachamim Reh. Legami le'ashtachon. Okay, but we're fine. The Torah is giving the poor person a break, but we're not finding that it's taking away a complete thing. You're not finding that it's taking away a complete component of the carbon of the Asher. If the Osher has three Yisroinus for Nesachim, then yeah, of necessity, the Oni is going to have some kind of Nesachim with his carbon. So yeah, automatically we know that. Therefore, we don't need the word Yisroin. Okay, so that's the argument back and forth. So we're left with, though, that the Nechemya and Rabbi Eliezer stick to their guns. They hold we need the word Yisroin to teach us that the guy has to bring an Yisroin at all. Therefore, we don't have it available for any drushes so about the number of Logim to go with the number of Yisroinus. And the Chachamim disagree with that.
Coming back on the
pasuk, it sounds
very
lug.
Yeah.
Balu. No. Isoren, bolo, the lug. Those are three different words in three different parts. The isoren, the whole part of the pasuk goes. The isoren, solus, echad, bolo, bashemen, lemincha, the loy, chomen. That's how that half of the pasuk goes. So the Chachamim are taking the word Yisorin, the word Bolol, and the word Loig, and putting them together to result in this Derasha.
One for one.
Yeah, one for one, right.
And Rabbi Eliezer.
Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Nechemya are not focusing on that, again, because they say the word Yisorin is needed to teach us that the guy has to bring an Yisorin at all, because otherwise we would think not. Therefore, they focus on the last part of the passage, L'mincha v'loig shaman. Therefore, it means every mincha has a load of oil. Okay, now the question is, Rabbanan hai l'mincha v'loig shaman my afilai. Okay, so now what are the Chachamim doing with those words? The answer is, ahu l'mitznadiv mincha. Okay, but that teaches us, they say, in general, when a person brings in a mincha as in a dava, here by Mitzvah, he's required to bring it, but you have a case where a person brings it voluntarily, shalo yifchais midavra, tolen lug. The rule is, he has to bring, the minimum he can bring is something that requires a lug of oil. Or mind you, isorin. Namely, that would be an isorin. So therefore, they say, that's what we learn from the mincha, the loik shaman, that the minimum size mincha is one that includes one log. And since they learned from earlier in the pasuk that the number of logim equals the number of asuranis, automatically that means the minimum size mincha that a person can bring is one isarim. Okay, so Idach, what would Rabbi Nechemya and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov answer? They would say, Tazi Shamasina. Fine, but you're still able to learn both things from the same pasuk, because ultimately that's what the pasuk is telling us, that the guy is bringing a mincha with one log of oil. Therefore, we can learn, the Torah is telling us in general, every mincha contains one and only one log of oil. You can't bring less than that, because yeah, it's true. We agree with you, Chacham. You have to bring the minimum amount of flour that goes with one log of oil, namely any foreign, but not that it means that you should add extra log in for extra extra.
He said the minimum is one sorry.
Is one log, therefore one foreign. But that's it. We don't learn that you have more log in for more strength. As usual, the halacha is like the Chacham. Then we said in the Mishnah, Shisha Lapara Burl Ayl Shlosh Alatavis, we said that the next three measuring cups in the Mishnah were a six log one for the Nesachim, for the oil and the wine that were brought together with a par, so that was for an ox that was brought as a carbon. Our Burl Ayl, and by the way, it's not just an ox, a male one, it's also for the par, also for the female, also for the female, a cow that a person could bring, let's say, the Shalom. Same idea. Anyway, our Burl Ayl, four logim for a ram, and a ram specifically is an adult male sheep. shloisha lakeves, and three for a sheep, meaning male or female under a year and female over a year. Okay. So menolon, where do we know those amounts? Let's write this stuff in. So the pasuk says, v'niskeim chatsi ahin yiyam atar. The pasuk says, v'nisakim should be a half a hin for a par. And then it continues, a third of a hin for an aisle and a quarter for a keves. So let's figure out how many lugin that is. Hin treisa lugin hanyan. A hin consists of 12 lugin. And we know that this is shemen zayisin, because it says by the shemen amishta that Hashem tells Moshe that among the ingredients are a hin of olive oil. And a few psukim later, it says, Shemen Nishmat Kodesh Yezeh Lila Derisechem. This holy anointing oil should be for me for all your future generations. The word Zeh Begimatia Shreifer Havian. The word Zeh is Gematria 12. And in fact, in Horius, we learned that from that, we learned that the whole 12 Logan continued to exist forever. None of it was ever used up, the Derech Nes. So therefore, we see that a hin consists of 12 Logan. Therefore, automatically, a half a hin means 6 Logan, etc.
So that's just a
gematria.
We don't establish our
halos. In this case, obviously we do. Rashi brings up the interesting point. Why don't we say, okay, fine, we know it's 12 units. Maybe it's 12 revias. The answer is the minimum size liquid measure that the Torah ever mentions in connection with carbonus anyway is a lug. Therefore, if we're saying that the hin consists of 12 units, then it has to be 12 lugin.
How do you get to 12?
Wait a minute, how you get 12? 12 lugin makes a hin.
No,
Zion and Hay equals 7 and 5. Yeah. Zion and Hay equals Zion and Hay, 7 and 5.
Okay.
So what's that? Zed is a matter of trace. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Shloisho Mech for the menorah. We said that they use 3.5 log of oil for the menorah. Chasi log lachomer, a half a log per lamp. Half a log times 7 is 3.5. Menorahani Miri, how do we know that you use that amount? So the turn it up on them, we learn it a brighter. Like this. The Pasuk says, Me'erev ad boiker. The Pasuk says that the menorah has to be burning from the evening till the morning. That means, ten lamidosa should take a leches, vahe leches, me'er abad bursa. That means you have to put enough oil in there that it has to be able to burn throughout the night.
Talk about that.
Yes. Dover, acher, another explanation, me'er abad bursa, another meaning of the word me'er abad bursa, means, ein lacha avoida shakshera, me'er abad bursa, elo zugobad. It means there's no other avoida, which is kosher, to be done from the evening to the morning, except for this one. Now, what does that mean? Does that actually mean that they lift? Does that actually mean that they lift the menorah after Shkia? So Rashi Kaviyad, in fact, learns that way. That yes, they would light the menorah after Shkia, unlike all the other avodas and the mitzvahs were done during the day. Okay, so Tosis points out you had also burning the ivorim, which they could do throughout the night. But at least the ideal the carbon pesach you ate at night. We're talking about avodas for one. Yeah, but the difference is, so it says that at least burning the Evorim and Chalev and whatever, they were supposed to start during the day. If they couldn't finish it during the day, then they could go into the night. It's not something that Makhila, you start at night. And the same thing also, they say Turma Sadeshin, fine, but Turma Sadeshin is not the whole night. You do it shortly before the morning. Here, we're saying that you have something where you actually are supposed to do it at night. However, with that said, you have other opinions among the Rishonim. In particular, for example, the Rashba has a tshuva where somebody asks him about this, and the Rashba explains, no, it absolutely does not mean that the menorah was lit at night. The menorah was lit during the time when they were bringing the Talmud Shavu and Arba'im. All it means is, when Al Gemara says, Ein lacha avoda shekherem me'erev avoda elo zugovad, it means this was the last avoda of the day. This was the last avoda. After that, there was no other avoda done during the day. After they list length. But nevertheless, it still had to be done during the day. No, it was done as part of the process, during the process of bringing the carbon down. And the last part of the process would be that they'd light the menorah.
According to the pasuk, it started
Me'erev can also mean in the late afternoon. Because, for example, we have Bein Ha'abayim, which is when the carbon Talmud is brought. Yeah, the word Erev more broadly can mean the afternoon. So therefore, okay, fine. So now the question is, how much oil do you need in order to burn overnight, or from the middle of the whatever, from the late afternoon until the night, as the case may be? The Shira Chachamim, Chassilog Me'urtavad Sasra. The Chachamim, he's figured out that you need a half a log to be able to burn from the evening or from the afternoon until the following morning. Okay, how did they figure that out? One way of looking at it is that they figured that they went from the top to the bottom. They started with a larger amount. They started, let's say, with a log. They found they had left over. But then they went down and they gradually worked their way down and they found the half a log works and they set it at that.
Yeah.
They made them a certain thickness. Hold on. The Ikadami Mimakalamaiwa Shiru, another opinion is they did the other way around. They started, let's say, with a Revius, and they found that wasn't enough. It burnt out sometime during the night. So then they added a little more until they reached the happily. So one way or the other. What would be a practical difference between them? Rabbeinu Gershon explains a practical difference. According to the opinion that they went, well, one second, you know what, let's learn the next line. The opinion that says they started with lesser amounts first and then worked their way up to a half a log, he says this is an example of a Torah for Solomon and Trey Israel. The Torah is Rahmanus on Jewish money. They didn't want to start out with too much, where then it's going to have to be wasted because it's going to have to be thrown out in the morning. Yeah. The other opinion that says they started with a larger amount and worked their way down, they said, because you follow the rule, because there's no poverty in a place of wealth, this would be an example, they say, where you apply that rule, that we don't do things on the cheap in the bit mixer. So they would start out with a larger amount. Okay, it means that at the beginning there's going to be so wasted. Okay, so Rabbeinu Gershom points out a practical difference between these two arguments would be, are you allowed to put in more than a half a loaf? If we say that, point is, I try to cross on the money to show you so, then it means you put in exactly a half a loaf, no more, no less. If you say that it's ain't a nias mach mashiris, it means the minimum is a half a loaf, because that's what you need in order to burn overnight, but you can put in more if you want. That's the answer. The Rambam doesn't ask about it one way or the other. The Pashas, I mean, they would put in a half a log, but he doesn't say specifically about how they arrived at that calculation.
And the entire discussion is based on a thickness of the weight.
Well, so, okay. Right, so apparently they would, well, okay. Well, okay, so Tosfos points out that, okay, if this amount is enough for the longest night, so what about on all the other days? The one possibility is, yeah, maybe they had leftover oil on the other day. It's a big deal. The other part, they made up a standard amount, a half a log, but the half a log was meant to be that it'll last throughout Leilat Kufat Tevis, that on the longest nights of the year, it'll last throughout the whole night. The rest of the year, yeah, there'd be some left over. Then Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that says no. In the summertime, when the nights are shorter, they would make thicker wicks. In the wintertime, they would make thinner wicks. So therefore, they'd always try to work it out. So when they first made the estimate, they would use average size wicks. Then they would make them slightly thicker or slightly thinner depending on the time of the year. That's how Tosfos was bringing from the Yerushalmi.
Is it because of the
careful about the moment that they're going to go out? So a number of Achronim point that out, but on the face of it, in that case, they weren't used to the mitzvah those first few nights. And here's something interesting to point out in connection with coming up with within a month of Hanukkah, so it's time to start talking about it, that you have, we all know the famous kasha of the Beit Yosef, why it's Hanukkah 8 days, if they had enough oil for one night, on the face of it, the nest was only for 7 days, and of course they have hundreds and hundreds of answers that have been given to it. The Beit Yosef himself gives three answers, and one of them is that what they did is each night they used only 1/8 of the oil supply in that jug. The jug would be enough, it contains 3.5 logs, it would be enough for one night if they filled up the cup to the top. But instead, they divided it into 8 parts and used 1/8 each night because they knew it was going to take them 8 days to get new oil, and the net was that each time it burnt through the whole night anyway. That's one of the basic answers. Zacharynim point out, based on that, we have the answer. I burnt out those first two nights. Doesn't matter. The fact that you put in less than a half a log is not an answer. They were trying it out. They did what they could. In the case of the people at the time of the next comic, they didn't know it's going to burn through the whole night either. And nevertheless, there was still there for the
war.
No, that the point is that according to that answer, they were allowed to do that because even though you're supposed to put in a half a log, it's not like you're not Yosef if you put in less than that. It's possible. No, the point is, when they made these evaluations, yeah, maybe they did, but that's not the point. The point is, still, yeah. Tosfos mentions another point. They could have used ordinary oil also, but still, it means that even when it comes to that, we don't do things on the cheap. Okay. Mishnah says.
They didn't use David's data stuff.
Yeah. Mishnah says like this. Ma'arze niske kardim b'niske eilim. You are allowed, now, we have to remember, in the previous Mishnah we mentioned that you have three different amounts of the liquids, of the oil and the wine, that go with korban. You have, again, 6 lugim of wine and 6 lugim of oil for an ox or for a bull or a cow, 4 for a ram, for the talking, 4 each of oil and wine for a ram, 3 of each for a sheep. You also have, with each one of them, the talking also consists of, you have flour. And the amounts of flour are 3 esrionim for a par, 2 for an aisle, 1 for a kevah. So we discussed earlier in the Masechta the concept that those amounts, they don't match up as far as consistency. You have like this. For a power, again, you have 3 estuarium of oil and 3 estuarium of flour mixed with 6 lugim of oil. So you have 1, you have 2 lugim per estuarium of flour.
3 to 1 of flour.
You have 3 estuarium of flour and 6 lugim of oil mixed with it. So therefore you have 2 lugim of oil for every 1 estuarium of flour. Right. Well, it's not double because a lugim, that's why it's not double in numbers. A lug is much smaller than an estuarium, but whatever.
3 estuarium.
Yeah, 3 estuarium, yes. By an aisle, you have the same thing, same proportion, because by an aisle, you have the oil is 4 lugim and the flour is 2 estuarium. So the same thing, 2 to 4. But by a keves, you have a different proportion, because by a keves, you have 1 estuarium and you have 1 estuarium and 3 lugim. You have 3 lugim instead of 2.
What is that?
That's what Kabbalah says. But the point is that results in halacha as follows. The Mishnah says, Ma'arv and Niske Parim and Niske Elim.
So 3 and 6.
3 and 6, 4 and 2.
Four.
But then you have 1 and 3. 1 and 3.
1 and 3.
Yeah. So Ma'arv and Niske Parim and Niske Elim, you are allowed to mix together the Nesachim of a par together with the Nesachim of an aisle. And we have,
okay,
1 second. Or Niske Kvasim and Niske Kvasim, you're allowed to mix together the Nesachim of a Keves with the Nesachim of a Keves. Even Shal Yachid B'Shal Tzibur, you're allowed to mix the ones from a korban of a Yachid together with the ones from a korban of a Tzibur. Shal Yoyim B'Shal Emesh, you're also allowed to mix the ones from today with the ones of yesterday. We've learned a number of times already in Zvachim and in Arma Sechta that you're allowed to bring in the Sochim the next day. So you could have, for example, you brought a korban yesterday and you bring in the Sochim today, and then you have another korban that's being brought today together with the Sochim. You're allowed to mix them. But you are not allowed to mix the Nesachim of a Keves with the Nesachim of a Par and an Ayin. Now, one thing we have to keep in mind is the word Nesachim actually... That we have to keep in mind, for purposes of understanding our Mishnah and also the Gemara, that the word Nesachim has a double meaning. The word Nesachim has a broader meaning, which includes all of these things that are brought together with the Korban, the flour, wine, and oil. And then in a narrower sense, the Nesachim means specifically the wine which is poured on the Mizbeach, as opposed to the flour and oil which is mixed together as a mincha and burnt in the fire of the Mizbeach. So we have to figure out, which is what we're going to be discussing tomorrow, which meaning are we talking about in our Mishnah? Do we mean mixing together the flour and oil mixtures, or do we mean mixing together the wine?
The wine was poured separately, right?
Yes. Yes.
But the flour and the
flour and the oil were mixed together, and yes. Continues the Mishnah, the imbolon elu b'snei atzman, the elu b'snei atzman, if you mix each mincha separately, then it's arvu, and then the menachas got mixed together, let's say even the kvasim with the parim and the elim or whatever, kshayim, then they're kosher because at least originally they were mixed together with their proper amount of oil. So like this, in other words, if they hadn't been, then you would have the problem that we learned earlier in Arma Sechta, where you have different menachas that mix together and absorb from each other. There you'd have a problem. Because again, the one from Keves has more oil in it proportionally than the other two do. But if you mix each one separately with its oil, and then you took the ones of the Keves and mixed them together with the ones of the aisle, that's not a big deal because each one was already mixed separately and became a kosher mincha separately. In other words, like this, so far, it sounds like, and again, we're going to discuss in the Gemara whether this is actually what it means, but it sounds like the Mishnah is saying as follows. And this is how Rashi explains, because Rashi is explaining what it sounds like. So we'll see in the Gemara what it actually means. It means like, on the face of it, it means like this. If you had, so you have, let's say, for example, 2 kvasim, which each one has one estuarium of flour and 3 lugim of oil, you would be allowed to take the 2 estuarium of flour and the 2 estuarium of flour and the 6 lugim of oil and mix them all together. So it doesn't matter. It's the same proportion. You would not be allowed
2 kvasim.
You have 2 estuarium. You have 2 estuarium and 6 and 6 lugim. So you'd be allowed to mix them all together because you're still keeping the same proportion. However, the Mishnah would be saying that you wouldn't be allowed to, let's say, take the 1 estuarium of flour for a keves and the 2 for an aisle together and mix them and then add to them the appropriate amount of oil, which would be altogether then 7 estuarium, 3 for one, 4 for the other, because the proportions are different.
What,
you can't do that.
What are the
power in the aisle? The power in the aisle have the same proportion, so that you would be allowed to.
It's not the same amount.
Doesn't matter, as long as the proportions are the same. However, the Mishnah is saying, if you mix the keves with its amount of oil. You mix the one Isarim with the three Logan. Separately for the Ayo, you mix the two Esgurim and the four Logan. And afterwards, you mix them together, then it would be okay. Okay. Im Absolut Bolo, but if it was before you mix the oil in, possible, then it's possible. Then, again, we'll discuss in the Gemara what this whole part of the Mishnah is. Then the Mishnah says another detail, HaKeves HaBoyma Omer, the sheep that was brought as part of the Mustafim, so not really as part of the Mustafim, but as a separate carbon, together with the Korban Omer. We talked in the earlier parak about the flour that was used for the Korban Omer, but in addition, there was also a Keves brought with it. Even though the mincha that accompanies it, you had besides the omer, you had a regular mincha of wheat flour that came with the keves. It was double. The pasuk says you have two esrarim as opposed to the usual one esrarim for a keves. Nevertheless, well, how you nesach up kulin, but it's nesachim for the omer. But nevertheless, it's nesachim, it's wine, and its oil were not doubled. They were still the same three lugim of wine and the same three lugim of oil that you would have for every other sheep. So in other words, you have, normally a sheep has one Isarin of flour and three logim of oil. In the case of the sheep with the omer, you have two Isarin of flour and three logim of oil.
That's the only time, yes.
Incidentally, by the way, an interesting thing we come out of that, and we'll see in the Gemara also, is it means that both the wine and the oil can be called nesachim, which explains an interesting point that we say in Yom Tov davening, where actually tonight is the Shodesh as well. We say tomorrow in Mus. We say, so why are we mentioning again the yayin kinistra? If we said mechasim and eskeim kamadoba, then it means, yes. And in fact, the Maharshal argues the word kinistra over there is a mistake. You should just say the yayin. However, based on our Gemara, Achorim points out that no, the answer is we can see both the wine and the oil separately can be called nesachim. The wine is considered nesachim separately because it's poured on the zeach. The oil is considered nesachim because it is a liquid, even though it's mixed into the flour. Nevertheless, it still is a liquid. Therefore, when chasim and eskeim can be gerbo would refer to the flour and oil, and then v'yayin kinisko would mean the wine. Which are different. Okay. So the Gemara starts off.
And why would it be a mistake?
So the Maharshal argues that once you're saying in this game, it means both the wine and the oil. So why are you mentioning it? We're saying in the Mishnah that you're allowed to mix the nesachim of different korbanos together as long as they have the same proportions. Sigmar says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says that when the pasuk says v'hikfir roi, the pasuk says you should burn it. Meaning, you're not allowed to mix the chalav of one carbon with the chalav of another carbon. So by the same logic, when the sachem are also offered on the mizeach, you shouldn't be mixing them either. If it happened, but yeah, then fine, you can be mixed with them, but you're not close to the chalav. No, what it means, if they got mixed, then you have the dinyan. That if it was parim and elam, then it'll be kosher. No, they're the sachem. If the Dieved, the Parim and the Elam, got mixed together, then it's okay because they still have the same proportion. But not if Parim were mixed with Kvasim because they have different proportions.
Yeah, but it doesn't...
Hold on. No, the answer is that, because again, the same way as with the Chela, the Chela and the Dieved, the same thing over here. The question is, Yehochi, in that case, what do you mean? When the Mishnah continues, the Ein Ma'av and Niske Kvasim and Niske Parim the Elam, in that case, what do you mean? The Mishnah continues, you cannot mix the Nesachim of a Kevis and the Nesachim of a Karen Isle. What do you mean? Basil and Avu Nami Loi. What do you mean? And if they got mixed, they'd be possible. Afterwards, Bahamid Chatani Sefer, but the next part of the Mishnah continued, Bolon Eilabas Neasman, the Eilabas Neasman, and it's Avu. If you mix each one separately, and then afterwards they got blended together, Shaven, then they're kosher. Mitwal, the Reish, Allah, Chilakama. The beginning of the Mishnah is not saying anything about what happens to the Ebed if they got mixed. It's telling us, it's on the face of it, it's telling us, you're allowed to mix in the stachim of one power with another power, or one power with another aisle, etc. So why should it be different than chela? The answer is, the Omer Abayas, Abayas says, Hochikam. Okay, what the Mishnah means is as follows. Ma'arvin yenon, imnis arv sultan v'shamnon. It means like this. If the flour and the oil of two different carbonates have gotten mixed together, l'chachila, you shouldn't be doing it, because it's like the chela. But if the oil and the flour, the mincha that goes with the carbon were mixed together, then you're allowed l'chatchila to mix the wine together. But not, so in other words, if nothing was mixed yet, then you shouldn't be mixing anything. Not the flour and oil, and not the wine from one carbon with another. But if the flour and oil were already mixed together anyway from different carbonates, then l'chatchila you're allowed to mix their wine together. Therefore, when our Mishnah says, Ma'ariv miske parim miske elim, it means you're allowed to mix the wine because in this case we're talking about that the flour and the oil happen to have gotten mixed together.
And that means you're from what?
That's because that's what the Mishnah is saying. You have a hachchila and you have a b'dievet. Okay, so the question,
we're saying, in other words,
when the Mishnah says Ma'ariv miske parim miske elim, does not mean hachchila you're allowed to mix together the flour and oil, because you shouldn't. Each korban's parts should be burnt separately on the mizbeach. But what do you mean, ma'ariv? It means you can mix together the wine, but only if the flour and water were already mixed. I mean, flour and oil of the different carbonates were already mixed together.
Vidyeva.
Okay. So the question is, Valtanya, no, but we learn a brayta. Vamed v'ramum v'soilus v'shemen. What is this talking about when we're saying the different rules of whether it's kosher or not? Is only as far as there's the flour and the oil. Avo yayin ma'ariv, but the wine we're allowed to be ma'ariv, which sounds like we're allowed to be ma'ariv of the wine even the chila, even if there was no mixture of any of the nesachim. Now, Elo Amar Abaya, Abaya says no. We have to explain it differently. Talki kama means like this. Hecha de hukter salt in the sham. So it doesn't mean, it still means the chila, but yeah, they're a little bit different than we said. Hecha de hukter salt in the sham nun. If we're not talking about they were just mixed together. If the solus and shemen of carbonus were already burnt on the mizbeach. So not just, we're not talking about that they were mixed. You have a par and you have an aisle, for example, that are being brought as korbanos, and their respective menachah, the flour and oil, were already offered on the mizbeach. Then ma'ariv and yayin l'chatchila, then l'chatchila at that point you're allowed to mix together their wine and pour it on the mizbeach. Heicha de lehukta, if the flour and oil hadn't been burnt yet, then it depends. In this ma'ariv salt of the shamran, if the flour and oil from different korbanos were already mixed, Ma'ariv and Nami Yenon, then you're also, at that point, allowed to mix together their wine chachila. The Imlav, a Ma'arivin, but if not, then you're not allowed to mix them, and the reason for that would be, Dilma Osi Le'irubi Serlus V'Shem Al-Chachila, because if you were allowed to mix the wine in that case, you might mistakenly think that L'Chachila, you're also allowed to mix the flour and oil, which you're not, because they belong to different carbonas, and you're not supposed to be mixing them. So in other words, Abaya is saying you have three cases of it here. One is where the flour and oil have not been mixed yet. Don't be mixing them together. And that's it. Everything should be offered separately. And the wine of each one should also be kept separate. Number two would be if the dieva they were mixed together, then you're allowed to mix together the wine. You're allowed to mix together the wine at that point. It's not like a chila, but you could mix them together at that point. And then the third case would be if the solus and shemen of the respective korbanos were actually already offered, then at that point, like a chila, you're allowed to mix together the wine.
So if you had not offered the solus and shemen, you can only do it with the evet.
You can only do it with the evet, and you can only do it at all only if the solus and shemen were mixed. If the solus and shemen weren't mixed, then you're not supposed to be mixing the wine. Right. Because of Xeris and Abonin, because you might come to mix the flour and oil also, which Lachachila, you're not supposed to.
If the Shemen were mixed and offered, then...
If they were offered already, then Lachachila, you're allowed to mix the wine. That's the opposite.
Right. And if
they're
not offered...
If they're not offered, but they were mixed, then you're allowed to mix the wine together, but you shouldn't do with Lachachila.
Right. And so, the last case when you can...
When you can do it Lachachila, so therefore now we can look over our Mishnah again and see. The Mishnah therefore said, now we understand the Mishnah to be saying, Ma'ariv and Niske Porim and Niske Elim, Niske Kvotim, Niske Kvotim, Shoyachim, 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 Lachachila, you're allowed to mix together the wine of them when the flour and oil of them have already been offered on the Mizbeach. Avo Ein Ma'ariv and Niske Kvotim and Niske Porim and Elim, but you're not allowed to mix the wine of Kvotim with the wine of Porim and Elim, even if the solus and shemen had already been offered, because there you have a real problem that even if they've already been offered, we still don't ever want you mixing things from different carbonas, because you may come to mix them before they were offered. And in the case of Kordim and Elam and Kvotim, that would create problems if you mix them before.
So what sense that you come to think that you can't do it before?
Right. So the wine, if it was mixed with the evid, we're saying fine. But if you mix the one of the tevis and the one of the aisle separately, and then they all got blended together, then find their kosher b'di'evet, same way as chalavim that got mixed together b'di'evet, our kosher b'di'evet. Imam shalei bol apostle, but on the other hand, if the menachos got mixed together before they were blended with their flour and oil, then it would be possible. And for that matter, if the wine was mixed together, then it would be possible. So that's what it means.